discouragement is a powerful weapon of Satan. Numbers 21 shows that because of discouragement, Israel spoke against God and Moses, both of whom just led Israel out of Egypt. And God punished them for their murmuring, which had arisen from their discouragement. Therefore, when we're discouraged, it's critical to find out why we became discouraged and then find out what we can do to get out of it. In Numbers 32, the Bible shows that Israel did not enter the land of Canaan because of it. Discouragement can turn into depression, and then the problem becomes a stumbling stone rather than a stepping or building stone. And when a person is depressed, he is despondent, inactive, can't be motivated, and doesn't want to be motivated. In 1983, at the North Long Beach Church of Christ, I became very, very discouraged. I can't recall now, because that's 40 years ago, whether I wanted to quit preaching or what. It wouldn't surprise me if I was on the verge of that. And I later realized that my discouragement came from two sources. Outwardly, it came from people who let me down. I lost two close friends in the congregation, one through forsaking the congregation and going somewhere else because he didn't know how to resolve a problem in the congregation that he had with someone else, and another one who just fell away from the Lord. And the way some were leaving the congregation, and so the membership was declining a little bit, the abundance of some weird things that some of the people were teaching there. I know I was really young when I started preaching there. You know, I was 22 years old, and I think the last Sunday that I was there, I had just turned 26. And so it was very hard for a lot of the older people, especially, to hear such a young person preaching. And so they really kind of had a field day in going at me. Instead of encouraging me as a new preacher, they just really seemed to attack me a lot. And there was just a lot of misrepresentation going on and so on. But the other source, the inward source, was me. I let myself down. I discovered that I had little faith in the scriptures, that I was hypocritical because I was not preaching or believing what I was preaching. I feared man and yet tried to please man instead of God. And there's always that issue of pride. And I want to show you tonight that there's something in 2 Timothy 4:16 through 17 that really brought me a lot of encouragement. And I found this to be true during this very discouraging, very down time that I went through. Here Paul said, "At my first offense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, so that the message might be preached fully through me, and that all the Gentiles might hear. And I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. And the Lord will deliver me from every evil work and preserve me for his heavenly kingdom. To him be glory forever and ever. Amen." So I want to show you how the Lord stood by me and strengthened me, and how it can happen for you. I discovered that the Lord is willing and able to do his part, but there's some things he requires from us. And we just absolutely have to do those things, or we're not going to come out of our lows. So I did come out of my discouragement, and I suddenly realized one day that, oh yeah, I'm not where I was a little while ago. And how did I get so far down? Why did I let that happen? And then, how did I come out of it? Because I didn't strategize and say, here's what I need to do to come out of it. But I did do some things. And there were 12 things, actually, that I could go back and look at. And I said, oh yeah, that helped me, and that did, and so on. And that's what I want to give you tonight. And this is just how I was back up on top. And what got me down is not necessarily what will get you down, like the things I just mentioned. There'll be other things that'll get you down. And there have been other things since then that have gotten me down. So it's not always the same thing. But it's just that I noticed that there were outward sources and inward sources. That's what I want you to know in particular. But I believe all 12 of the things that I'm going to show you tonight apply to you, whatever your situation might be. And I want to give three warnings, though. Don't expect encouragement overnight. Along the way, Satan will continue to try to knock you down, and there will always be peaks and valleys in life. Okay, so even after I got up high, there's been some times where I was low again, and back up high. Just it's like the Lord lets us go through those experiences, and we talked a little bit about that in my class this morning. And what follows is not necessarily in chronological order. Okay, these are just the things that I found, so we can do them in any order, but I know it's going to be impossible to remember all 12 things, but the last two that I'm going to give, I believe, are the most important. And number 12 in particular, if you do it, it'll lead you into the other 11. And you'll see what I mean by that when we get there. So number one was to listen to preaching. Of course, as the preacher, I don't get to listen to preaching. And that's one reason why I was really glad, actually, that I was here last Lord's Day, although we weren't planned to be, so I could hear Tim. I could hear somebody else speak. I used to go to lectureships all the time. I was invited to speak on lectureships. I would do gospel meetings, or there were gospel meetings in the area, and I would go to those. But that's almost completely stopped. So I never get to hear anybody anymore. And just listening to another man open up the Bible and expound on it just does something for my soul. And I hope it does for you as well. I want to encourage you to listen to it at every opportunity, because one of the reasons for preaching is encouragement. Okay, so in Acts 20, Paul is meeting with the elders of the church at Ephesus, and he's meeting them in another town, and he's giving them his last speech. He's reminding them of his ministry among them, and some things that they need to do. And here's the way he ends, or towards the end. Verse 32. So now, brethren, I commend you to God and to the word of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified. God designed his word, the book we call the Bible, which is just a Greek word that means book. I don't know if you knew that or not. So when we say the Bible is a book, we're saying the book is a book, but we mean the book. Anyways, God designed it in such a way to rebuke us when we need the rebuking and to build us up when we need it. And it's able to build us up like nothing else can. So when you get an opportunity to hear preaching, well, like you're doing tonight, you know, do it. Number two, be with brethren, publicly and privately. Publicly, such as what we're doing right now. You've probably heard Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10 talks about, about just why it is that we need to come together in this assembly. Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. And let us consider one another to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day drawing near. Okay, so God designed this service for us just coming together to be an edification, a building up process. And we do that, don't we? I mean, think about it. Like when this morning, and this is typical of here, I go to the back, as you know, Carrie and I go to the back, and you know what? I hardly greet anybody out there. And you know why? Because you're all in here talking with each other. Personally, I think that's wonderful. And I don't see anything like this or like that. It's because you're having a good time with each other. And you're building each other up, whether you realize you're doing that or not. So don't forsake the assembly when discouraged. I know that's sometimes when we are tempted to flee from it. But one of the things about being a preacher that I've learned is, believe me, there were some times when I thought if I wasn't a preacher, I wasn't going today. But I just can't not show up. What would you do if I just didn't show up on Sunday? I think I'd be in trouble. So I have to come here. And then afterwards, I was like, I am really glad I went. So just drag yourself here, get here, and be with your brothers and sisters. I believe it'll be a blessing to you. And privately, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17, says, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Okay, how many times have you heard the name Steve Lloyd? You know, Steve and I have been friends since 1978. Even we actually met each other before we went to preaching school, but that's where we really cemented our friendship. And we've both needed times of encouragement. His daughter went through some really bad times where she did some things that, well, she got arrested and she was in prison for a while. And Steve would call me. And a lot of it was while I was still here in Grants Pass after I'd already moved here. And he'd call me and just say, Don. And he couldn't say anything else. Because his heart was so broken. But he knew he could call me and I'd be there for him. And it was always just the opposite. Whenever I needed him, he was always there. I mean, he traveled from Southern California to Portland when I had my transplant in 1998. That still, to this day, just blows my mind that he did that. Friends in Christ can just really build you up and make you better than you were before. Ecclesiastes 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, speaks about just how much it means to have a friend. Listen to this. Ecclesiastes 4:9. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Again, my job, if you want to call it that, is to be a preacher. I have to show up here. If I want to continue to receive a paycheck and have your respect and so on. And so, like I said, I've come when I just didn't really feel like it, and it was a blessed experience. And I went, during this time in 1983, I went to some brethren outside of the congregation in this case. I went to Steve Lloyd. I also went to Brother Steve Guy, who was one of my teachers in preaching school. And he understood, because he had been through stuff before. And again, I cannot tell you how much of a blessing it was just to sit down with him, and he knew exactly where I was coming from, and he built me up. And at the same time, he didn't tear down the brethren of Long Beach. It's not like he took my side and said, here's how evil all those people were. He didn't do that. And I didn't want that. It was him building me up, helping me to be what I needed to be. So Hebrews 3 and verse 13, I think, indicates some kind of constant contact with brethren. Okay, here's what Hebrews 3:13 says. Exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Number three, recognize God's power. Okay, this really is a coincidence, okay? But I'm going to refer to a passage that I gave to you in Bible class and in my morning sermon. So maybe the Lord had me put all these things together because maybe we all need to hear this or someone does. I don't know. But 2 Corinthians 12. Okay? You heard it this morning. You'll hear it again. Verse 9. When Paul wanted that thorn in the flesh removed, the Lord said to him, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me." So Paul was recognizing the power of God in his life. He may have thought that he didn't see it in his infirmities and problems and troubles and all that kind of stuff. But the Lord taught him, no, that's when my power is really there. That's when you're really going to see it. So learn to look for God's power even when you don't think it's there. Judges 7, verse 2, has always impressed me with how God works. I think he works this way throughout the entire biblical story. It's just that he comes out and says it here in Judges 7, whereas he doesn't in other places. But you can see this being played out in other places. In Judges 7, God has persuaded Gideon to fight against the Midianites because he didn't want to do it. He didn't think he was worthy of doing it and so on. God persuaded him, you can do it and here's why. So he gets an army together, 32,000. Here's what God says. The people, in verse 2, the people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel claim glory for itself against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. 32,000 against 135,000 Midianites is too much. So you know the story. God got the numbers down to 300. Okay, now we can do it, Gideon. Your 300 are going to wipe out the 135,000. And guess what? They did. It was obvious that it wasn't Israel that did it. It was obvious that God did it. And that's why he wanted those numbers down. I mean, look at Moses at the Red Sea. Here he's got a bunch of slaves. I've figured at least 3.5 million people. They're slaves. That's how they've been living. He leads them out of Egypt, and they come to the Red Sea. They have no boats. They have no way of crossing it. They just come out of the mountains through a pass, and now the Egyptians are pouring into this big plain that's on the Red Sea, and they're pouring in. So what are they going to do? Moses just said, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. And he does the unthinkable. He splits the Red Sea open and keeps the Egyptians separated from them. Oh, marvelous. I just love that. How about David against Goliath? I can just keep on going with the stories from the Scriptures. We need to realize that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. Philippians 4:13. And the strength of the present tense in Greek is a little bit stronger than it is in English. So when Paul says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me, what he's literally saying in the Greek text is, who keeps on strengthening me. It's not like he gives you a little shot and then that's it. He stays with you the whole way. He just keeps injecting you with strength through the whole thing so you can do anything. And when I recognized the power of God, I took courage, and he's not let me down since. Do not forget his power, because that was a common sin of Israel. They did forget. Number four, strive to please God, not man. In Galatians 1, verse 10, Paul explained partly why he was an apostle of Jesus Christ. And this describes his manner of preaching. If you look at his preaching and how he spoke, look at him in the book of Acts, and then see how he wrote in all his letters, you're going to think, okay, that makes sense. Galatians 1:10. For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. You know, you're never going to make everyone happy. I mean, surely you must know that. And if you please God, you'll end up offending man. I mean, excuse me. Well, that's true too, but if you end up trying to please man, you'll end up offending God. And that's something you don't want to do. I mean, you've probably read, I'm sure, from James chapter 4 and verse 4, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whoever, therefore, makes himself a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. So we can please man in matters outside of biblical doctrine, but we cannot and should not try to please man when it comes to the Bible teaching. Number five, you need to realize you're not alone. Most people, when they get really down low, they believe they're the only ones in that situation, and that's just not true. There are others. 1 Peter 5 shows Peter reminding brethren in the first century that they were not alone, but that others were suffering the same things that they were. 1 Peter 5, 8 and 9. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. You're not alone. It's easier to fight when you know you're not alone. They're enduring, so can I. And your experiences are not new. In Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 15, the scripture says this: that which is has already been, and what is to be has already been, and God requires an account of what has passed. There's someone in the scriptures, or there's a teaching, many teachings I would even say, that your life would fit right into it. Study the lives of past saints. So that's one of the things I really benefited from in preaching school, was learning about the Restoration Movement and church history all the way back to the first century. Man, you see what people have gone through and their victories in faith and stuff. It's really a blessing. Number six, practice love. Learn its true meaning. Because love puts the emphasis on others and their burdens. And when we're down, we're putting the emphasis on ourselves. And all that does is just bring us down lower and lower and lower. Galatians, chapter 6, verse 2, shows what we should be doing. Paul said, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. That's the law of Jesus, that I bear your burdens and you bear my burdens. It makes life easier. Well, I guess I'm going to have to start cutting out material or I'll never get out of here. So let's go to number seven. Limit your work. A lot of us are like Martha in Luke chapter 10. There's a lot of people who don't want to do anything, but there's others of us who want to do too much. And we, like her, we're anxious and troubled about many things, and it's so easy to fall into that trap. Remember, Jesus had come to her house, and where her sister Mary lived also. And Jesus is there teaching, and Mary's sitting at his feet. But Mary is, you know, fixing the food and preparing it and serving it and doing all that stuff. And she's a little annoyed with her sister and orders the Lord to tell her sister to help her. And that's when Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you're anxious and troubled about many things, but Mary has chosen the good part, which will never be taken away from her. Yeah, you know, serving needs to be done. We need to serve people meals. We need to have people in our homes. I would encourage you to do that. But ultimately, we need to listen to Jesus. And if we get too busy, we're not going to listen to him. Doing too much is discouraging because you'll never get it all done. And Someone sitting here will tell you, yep, I hope he's listening to what he's preaching right now. priorities like the spiritual will suffer. And nothing will end up getting done very well. See, number 8, I believe it is. Be patient. And here comes James 1 again. I want to apologize for that, but I'm not going to apologize and bring up Scripture. It's the third time I know I'm bringing up this passage. But it's I need to. So, if you need patience, God is going to put you in situations where you need to learn patience. What we would prefer is that I say, God, give me patience, and you know, holy zap comes out of heaven and you know, slaps you upside the head, and now I'm a patient person. No, he's going to put you in situations where you need patience. James 1, 2 and 3. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Be patient. That's what I did during my troubles. Your trial may be showing you that you're not as patient as you thought you were. Sometimes we get discouraged when things don't happen as quickly or as smoothly as we want. Remember that deliverance comes while you're in the fire. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, well, they were literally in the fire. They were not delivered until they went into the fire. Daniel was not delivered until he went into the den of lions. Job was not delivered until he lost everything. Noah was delivered through a flood and lost whatever he had in the world except for was in the ark. And of course, Jesus was delivered through death on the cross. Number 9, keep your sights on heaven. Remember that you have a hope of a better life, and then I think you'll be able to endure your hardships. Take your eye off the hope and onto your problems, and it's just going to bring you down lower and lower and lower. And heaven will never be on earth. Surely I've told you before the meaning of the word utopia. What was that in the story of Robinson Crusoe? Utopia? You know what the actual etymological meaning of utopia is? Look in the dictionary. No place. So the writer of that story came up with that word to let us know that the perfect place, heaven, does not exist on the earth. It's later. It's in another place. So we got to press on. Hebrews 11 gives us what some people call the hall of faith rather than the hall of fame. Well, it's a hall of fame too, but it's because they had faith. And in verse 16, the Hebrew writer spoke about the patriarchs. And he said this, now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. So although God told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this land is yours, ultimately it was not. Heaven was theirs. The land he gave them on earth was just temporary. But the home in heaven is forever. Therefore, we just need to keep pressing on. Like Paul told the Philippians in Philippians chapter 3, that we just need to keep pressing on toward the goal. Number 10, be sincere. Practice what you preach. See, I've been here 20 years. I bet it was 19 years ago, 18 years ago. I stood right here and I said, do you want the preacher to practice what he preaches? And a couple people said, yes. And I said, should Christians practice what they preach? And it was dead silent. I should practice what I preach. Which means sometimes I'm going to be a hypocrite because I'm not perfect. But you need to practice what you preach too, because the world is looking at you. The people you work with, the people in your neighborhood, the people in your family who are not Christians and so on, they're looking at you. They know what you believe. Are you living up to it? Practice your beliefs. Speak what you believe and live what you speak. Number 9, or 11, excuse me. Sincere was 10. So now here's the last two that I said are the most important. And this one here, of course, is to pray. God cares for you. He truly does. 1 Peter 5:7 tells us exactly to do, what to do when we have anxiety. 1 Peter 5:7. Casting all your care, some translations have anxiety, upon Him because He cares for you. Tell Him what's troubling you. Tell Him why you're down. Man, there's all kinds of psalms on that. And the psalmist will often ask themselves the question. I mean, like, I think it's Psalm 46 begins with, "Why are you cast down, my soul? Like, what's the matter with you? How did you let yourself get down?" That's what I did. I didn't know I was following Psalm 46, but that's what happened. You do that too, and watch how just things will open up for you. So list your anxieties, give them to God. Like I heard one preacher say one time, you know, don't carry them with you to bed. Give them to God because He's going to be awake all night anyways. And then just pray about sleeping. Don't pray about, once you've prayed about your problems, don't pray about them anymore. Pray about sleeping and see if that helps you. And then finally, number 12. What do you think it is? You heard a whole sermon on it this morning. And that is to believe the Scriptures. You know, read the Scriptures, but obviously then believe them. I know some people say, no. I've had a lot of Christians tell me that. No. My issues are much deeper than what the Bible can touch. That's like saying, my issues are much deeper than what God can touch. That's interesting. That's impossible. God can meet us anywhere we are, and He can be a blessing to us. But like Naaman, we want the complicated, the mysterious, and the sensational. Remember Naaman? What was that? 2 Kings 5? He wanted Elijah to come out and wave his hand over the place and call on the name of his God, make a big ceremony out of it, and then he would be cured of his leprosy. Instead, Elisha sent out a servant, didn't even come out himself, and told Naaman, go dip 7 times in the Jordan and your flesh will be like that of a baby. And that's when he got furious and he left. Still with his leprosy. And one of his servants, I think maybe even more than one, they were wise enough to say, look, if he had told you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it? How much more so when he tells you something so easy? So he went back and did it, and he was cured of his leprosy. Just like that. 2 Chronicles 20 is the last passage I want to give you tonight. 2 Chronicles, and I love the chapter and verse number, 20:20. You want perfect vision? Here it is, 2 Chronicles 20:20. And here is the king of Judah speaking to his people when they were up against a fierce enemy that was about to conquer them. And here's what it says. So they rose early in the morning and went out into the wilderness of Tekoa. And as they went out, Jehoshaphat stood and said, hear me, O Judah, and you inhabitants of Jerusalem. Believe in the Lord your God, and you shall be established. Believe His prophets, and you shall prosper. Wouldn't you love to have a president of the United States stand, you know, in Congress when he gives a State of the Union or when he's being inaugurated to say words like that? Man, I would love that. I bet that was great to be a citizen in Judah during that time. Wow, what a wonderful thing that would have been. In all of this, I discovered that the church urges daily prayer and Bible reading for good reason. And so, like I said at the very beginning, if you can't remember all 12, I can see that some of you wrote it down, and I'm really glad to see that, but if you can't remember all 12, just remember at least the last two. Because what's happening in the last two? The last two, you're talking to God, and God is talking to you. Is there a better thing to do, a better place to go, a better person to consult? I don't think so. Brother or sister, if you need help to get out of some kind of low, we want to do that number 11 for you right now. We would love to pray for you. If we can do that, come forward now as we stand and sing.